Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
The Elton John biopic, Rocket Man, hit theaters on Friday. I gave it a Dean's List A. I liked it.
And that is not an E. You are not an easy grader.
I am not an easy grader.
That is very impressive.
On some things. You also liked the movie. Not a surprise as a big Elton John fan. We'll find out what some other Elton John super fans thought of the movie as we kick that around for a minute. The weekend box office numbers, not a surprise that this Godzilla movie, Godzilla King of the Jungle, King of the Monsters, King of the World, as I called it, King of Clichés.
Oh, wow.
In my review, I gave it a Dean's List D-. I did not care for it at all.
Well, it's good to see that the people followed your advice.
Well, you know, there's something for everybody out there. There's no such thing as a right review or a wrong review. Everybody's got
You knew that was going to be the number one movie.
Yeah, it's a popcorn movie.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a popcorn movie.
And it's for teenagers. And, yeah, you know.
Not a surprise. Yeah. That took in $49 million. After that, it was Aladdin, which I highly recommend. And that took in $40 million. Rocket Man debuted at number three with a $25 million take.
And that's what they were expecting for that. They said between $20 and $25 million. It is R-rated, so.
It is right in the ballpark where they thought it was going to be. This Octavia Spencer movie, Ma, took in 18.2, and then it was John Wick Chapter 3 after that to round out the top five. But it seems like, you know, everybody of a certain age is interested in seeing this new Elton John movie. Elton Jim certainly has been. And also joining us on the phone is Wayne Martin, who is one of Jim's co-Elton John superfan buddies. Wayne, welcome to WGN. Nice to have you.
Oh, thank you for having me again.
And from where are we talking to you, Wayne?
Just outside of Boston.
Okay, very good. And also Sharon Kalinowski is on the line with us from the Chicago area. Sharon, welcome
to
WGN. Nice to have you with us. So, Sharon, let me start with you and get your initial impressions of the movie.
Sure. Well, the first time I saw the preview 2 weeks ago, I was very disappointed because of all the historical inaccuracies. And I thought that the movie reminded me more of the Across the Universe film from about 12 years ago, where the people would sing the Beatles songs. Okay. But then the second time I saw the movie just a few days ago, I liked it much better because I realized it's a musical fantasy, and then I could appreciate the acting much more.
Okay, very interesting, very interesting.
And I never thought of the Across the Universe movie.
Yeah,
that's a good kind of comparison. As opposed to Bohemian Rhapsody, which is, like you've said many times, a linear tale.
It's differently told. I just have a problem in general with, you know, when you go to see a movie and then you compare it to another movie.
Right.
I like to just judge a movie on its own. And it's a natural inclination to say, oh, yeah, it reminded me of this movie or that movie. But I like to just try to keep my blinders on and focus on the movie that I'm seeing. Wayne, how about you?
I loved it. I had actually read the script about 4 years ago, and it was the script that had actually sold the movie. And so I knew what to expect as far as the liberties that they were going to take. And I was amazed at how little the script had changed since reading the one that I had. I was really impressed. I thought they did a wonderful job of capturing Elton's overall essence. Amazed at how much information they were able to cram into 2 hours. You know, they take great liberties with the characters, combining characters, leaving other characters out who played major roles in his career. But, you know, this is a movie about him, and the movie would be a week long if they even attempted to get everybody in there. So I was impressed, and this movie screams for a Broadway musical treatment.
An adaptation, It's almost as if they made it that way.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, they wouldn't hardly have to touch the script. They could just take what they have and move it right to the stage.
Right.
So I would not be surprised at all if 5 years down the road, Jim and I and Sharon are all on our way to New York for the weekend to Broadway opening.
Oh, that is one lucky cast at the stage door every night. There's that Elton Jim guy from Chicago again.
Well, as I said, between Wayne and Sharon and me, we have seen what, over 600 shows, probably.
Easily
241.
How many?
241.
See, that's more than me, Dean. Wow.
How about you, Wayne? How many for you?
I'm a baby. I'm up to 158.
Oh, yeah, that's nothing.
He's the runt of the litter.
Yeah. I'll make you both feel better. I've seen four. I think it's four. If you count the Billy Joel and
any
Elton
younger,
John.
Dean, you better get on.
I know. Wayne, how did you feel about the point that Sharon made, which is true? There are many historical inaccuracies in the movie that I don't exactly understand why they do some of those things. Sometimes I understand where it furthers the plot line. It's an easier story to tell on screen. But in some cases, like in the movie, they say that there is one way that Elton John, Reginald Dwight, decided on his stage name, Elton John, when in fact it really was another way that happened. I mean, why did they need to do that? I don't get that.
That one surprised me because that was not in the script that I read. So that was a surprise. My impression is that they knew they couldn't get it all in. It was impossible to get his entire story in one movie. And so that's why they took the musical fantasy approach. And by putting that tagline in, it gave them, complete free rein to change things around. There were other things like the date on the posters for the Troubadour says July 1970, and of course it was August 25th, 1970. So I think once they got into it, it's like, well, let's just have fun and,
The only thing,
change everything around.
The only thing that bugs me about it is about some of those inaccuracies, and I felt like Sharon did initially. I thought I would be able to disassociate myself because Wayne had shared some of this stuff, and so I sort of knew what the way the film was going to be presented. So I thought I would be prepared for that. But some of the inaccuracies did bother me because I think, like Wayne and Sharon, I am so close to this story and I know every nook and cranny of it. But what surprised me was what I was impressed with was how they were able to put this 10,000 piece jigsaw puzzle into a coherent story, because there are some moments that are dramatic in his life that would have fit in perfectly to this story, and yet they didn't put them in, probably because of time, but they did find a way to get a lot of that information in there so that the story is coherent, even though it takes this kind of artistic liberty.
Yeah, and the way that they present it as well, they're able to take, they tell the narrative of his life, but they're able to use pieces of his songs, some from his later career, whose meanings, the meanings of the songs, fit more perfectly with something that was happening when he was a little kid and essentially being emotionally abused by his parents.
And that was the thing that, for anybody that knows the story, we have all heard about how supposedly cold and distant his father was. The one portrayal that I was most surprised when I saw it the first time was how his mother was portrayed, because usually she was always portrayed in the biographies and in the narrative of the story as a very supportive mother and the cold father, and the father was the impetus and the ambition for him to prove his father wrong.
Yeah, the movie does not paint the parents in the most positive light.
Neither of them.
At all.
No.
Do we know, is that accurate or not?
I'm surprised that they portrayed Sheila as what I would consider a real bitch in the movie, because I don't think she was like that in real life when he was younger, because, you know, in the documentary Tantrums and Tiaras, she sat next to him, and Elton said that she was the one person who stood by him no matter what.
Interesting. Wayne?
Yeah, they. My impression has always been that they did have a very volatile relationship all along, but they were very close. They were more like brother and sister. And so while, you know, I think there is possibly some accuracy, you know, how they're portraying her when he was a kid, there was definitely another side to her. There was definitely, you know, by all accounts, there was a very loving mother. And you know, that doesn't come across at all. So that confused me, too. I was surprised, especially since they were estranged, you know, for almost a decade before she died, and it was only in the last 18 months of her life that they had started communicating again.
Yeah.
So to portray her that way did surprise me.
Yeah, and we should mention that the real Elton John is the executive producer of this movie. Nothing was going to be in this movie if he didn't approve it. So
right. Exactly.
He knew good and well how his parents were going to be portrayed. He signed off on you know, all the decisions that were made and how the story was going to be told.
You know, the one thing that I find, Wayne had mentioned earlier about some of the people that were, that some characters were either created fictionally to play the roles of others because you can't get everyone in. But the one character, if I had to say, that I'm surprised, Long John Baldry, who was a early influence, and that's where the John from Elton John's name comes from. But if you're talking about a dramatic moment that a lot of people in today's world would be able to find relevant, one of the main impetus of Elton going into rehab, where this story begins, because the whole story is told when he enters rehab, was his meeting with Ryan White.
Right.
And he was at Ryan White's deathbed and with his family for the last several days of his life.
This was the teenage boy from Indiana, wasn't
right,
it?
Right, from Kokomo, Indiana,
who died of AIDS
in April of
1990.
Yeah. And right, so and 3 months later, 4 months later, Elton went into rehab right here in Chicago at the Parkside Center at Lutheran General. But so I was surprised that somewhere in that story, they couldn't have brought that in, because it really was Elton's viewing of how his life had gotten so out of control when he was watching this small middle class family dealing with the death of this young child.
Young kid,
that was the impetus, and I'm surprised that Ryan White did not, you know, show up anywhere.
Even if it had just been a 5 second scene of Elton reading Time magazine or whichever magazine
right.
it was where he initially read that story, if you just saw Ryan's name, you know, because they did do an amazing job at getting little things in that only us, you know, super fans, as you call us, would recognize, like Elton's first fiance, when he walks up, they portray her as the landlord in this movie, which, again, isn't true. But as he's walking up the steps the first time, there's a little person standing off to her right. And if you know the story, when Elton and she met, she was dating a little person. It was so-called Adam the Ant.
Mighty Adam,
thank you. And
now that's super,
you know, there he
fans.
Was. And they don't, the camera doesn't stay on him or anything. If you blink, you miss him. But it was little things like that that I was real impressed that they were able to get in, you know.
Yeah, it's always interesting the choices that they make and what parts. I mean, there were parts of his life that I thought were going to be in the movie that were not. But, you know, at the end of the day, again, I chose to focus on what I saw on the screen, not what I knew was not put on the screen. Let me take a break. We're going to update news, and we'll come right back. More of our Elton John Roundtable. And we'd love, if you've seen the movie, 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. I'd love to include some of your opinions and thoughts, tons of them on our text line. We'll get to those and to the phones coming up next, WGN. Look at me, I'm coming back again. I got a taste of love in a simple way. And if you need to know while I'm still standing, you just fade away. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true 7:36, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. And I guess if there is an anthem for this film, this Elton John biopic, it is I'm Still Standing. After everything he went through in his life, that he is still standing after all this time, that he survived. I guess that was the main point. Yeah, yeah,
72 years old, father of two, in a long-term committed relationship and marriage. So, yeah.
Yeah. Elton Jim Toronto is here to talk a little Elton with us, along with Sharon Kalinowski and also Wayne Martin. They are like Elton Jim, Elton super fans. And between you all, you are in excess of 600 shows, Elton John shows.
Yeah, I think Sharon said what? How many, Sharon?
241.
Yeah, Sharon is the winner.
She's the winner. I'm at 192.
And I'm at 158.
And I should. And I
how
should.
How did you all meet? Because you're at all the shows.
Well, we met through.
Fan magazines that came out, and we would see each other at concerts and other fan events.
And yeah, I have to give props to. There was a magazine called East End Lights, and that's what really brought everybody together in the early 90s. Tom Stanton started publishing this magazine, and I remember calling him, and he said, you know, there's two people you have to meet, and he gave me our good friend John Higgins' name, and he gave me Jim Toronto's name, and within 6 months of meeting them, I met Sharon and a whole bunch of others, so that was the start of it.
Yeah, that was in a pre-internet world, and this was a fan magazine all about Elton John. The funny thing is, the way I heard about it was almost like Bernie Taupin and Elton John met. I was looking at a classified ad in Rolling Stone magazine, and it said, all Elton John magazine, because this is pre-internet. We didn't know that there was a whole world of Elton John fans like us out there.
Right.
And so I wrote him a letter, and I subscribed, and then I said, hey, if you need someone to help write for you some stories, I can, having been a journalist. And so I wrote for that magazine for 10 years then.
Now Wayne and Sharon, do you you must have Elton John memorabilia the way that Jim does. We're going to be on our WGN-TV morning news this coming Tuesday. I'm going to be live from Jim's house. It's actually scaring me a little bit. I feel like I'm going into Norman Bates' house here.
Norman?
I'll tell you a story. We were changing cleaners recently, and we had one company come to the house, and they went through the house, and they were okay. And they were a little caught off guard by some of the artwork and Elton paraphernalia on the main floor. Well, then they went down to the next level where my office is, and just outright said, we're not interested. They said, we're not going to go near this. They didn't want the responsibility.
They thought they might damage something.
Yeah.
Well, like me, Wayne has an elaborate from the 80s, full blown costume with a giant punk rock wig and a sequined outfit that Elton wore that he got from the auction. I've got one of Elton's jackets. I mean, I have to say, Wayne has, if not the most extensive video collection of Elton John in the world, maybe even more than Elton John's archives has. And
yeah,
Sharon,
I've actually supplied stuff to them.
Let's Sharon tell. Okay. Sharon, tell what you have.
Well, let's see. I just have a few special things, like a shirt that he wore during a video, and I've sold off a few things over the last few years, like a piano bench that was one of his.
She had a piano bench.
I used to. No, I don't have a piano.
No, piano bench, yeah.
I used to have it. Yeah, I don't have it anymore, but I had it for a long time, and I downsized quite a bit.
She had quite a collection in her heyday, though.
I've got a lot of autograph things, including there was another person named Sharon from the early 70s who used to know him very well, and she let me have a lot of her things that were said, autographs to share. And I'm like, okay, that's good. It works for me.
Yeah, that didn't count.
That's personalized. What would you say is your what's your most prized possession?
I can't tell you.
I realize this is like asking who's your favorite kid, but
yeah. I don't know. Probably some of the autograph letter that he, like short thank you notes that he sent to me in the mail, are probably my most prized possession, as he goes.
Yeah, and Wayne, how about you? You got to have something that...
I honestly can't tell you. I'd be in a lot of trouble if I told you what my...
God, there's a fire in the house. What's the one thing you're going to grab? When you...
I've got a safe, a huge safe that's on wheels, and I always tell everybody, if there's ever a fire, get that safe out the back.
What's in the safe?
I've got so much stuff. I've got a huge collection of magazine and newspaper clippings. I've got like Jim said, I have the largest privately owned video and DVD collection in the world, and his management has actually gotten stuff off me over the years, clips that they don't have.
Wow.
And the costume, gold records. I did have, for about 20 years, I had the famous pinball machine, and I sold that when we moved because of space. Jim's got all three, I think. You've still got all three, right?
Yeah, people will be seeing the pinball machines on Tuesday. Dean will be playing, a pinball.
I'll be a pinball wizard.
There you go. Yeah, we can actually play a game.
Yeah, so
I wouldn't know where to start.
That's amazing. That's amazing. When we started the show this morning, we were talking about Jim's
obsession.
Adoration. And obsession sounds like it's weird, but just how you all have this absolute love for it. And I feel like deficient that I can't think of one thing that I like this much as you guys like Elton John.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for me, it's been a savior because I'm a puppeteer by trade, and I'm my whole life is my work, and so this has been a nice sideline for me to get my head out of work, and not to mention all the people I've met. I mean, my best friends are... like Elton fans like myself. So, it's been a lot of fun. And I always get, when people say obsession and all that, I do kind of cringe because nobody thinks twice if, what you spend on a baseball ticket or going, to these things. It's no different. It's just that this is music instead of a sporting event.
Well, that was the exact argument I made at the top of the show. If you're a season ticket holder for a football team or a baseball team, how come you're going to see more games than we've seen Elton concerts? So how come you're not obsessed?
Yeah, I would argue that going to a sporting event is different than seeing a musical performance. But I get the point.
It's not as fun.
I get the point. Here are some texts that are coming in at 312-981-7200. Good show today. The whole family went to see Rocket Man yesterday. Great movie. Here is another saying, perfect show for me today. I saw Rocket Man yesterday and sing falsettos this afternoon.
There you go.
Here is 847. Saw Rocket Man. Too many fantasy sequences made the movie confusing for me. Important parts are never fully explained.
That's the one thing, if there's a takeaway from this, I accept the movie for what it's trying to do. It's a fantasy. It's getting in as much of a story. I think it is an entertaining film. My only hope is that perhaps like they have done with, like Ron Howard has done documentaries and Martin Scorsese has done documentaries on Bob Dylan, maybe they can have an Elton John... an authorized documentary that sets some of the record straight. Because what does, I'm always legacy, obsessed. And what does concern me is that many people will see this movie and take what is presented as fact.
Yeah.
And so that bothers me. So hopefully maybe they can put out an authorized documentary by some major filmmaker and set the record straight, because the one thing missing from this movie, I think, is the real enormity and domination of his career for those 5-6 years between 1970 and 1976.
Oh, really? You don't think it's... I think it shows
he was,
what a global superman.
No. I mean, it does not capture
does
that.
Not.
I agree with Jim. If you live through that, there is absolutely, people say Michael Jackson in the 80s and all that. Nothing can compare to what it was like during those 6 years of Elton's reign in the 70s.
He had seven number one albums. He was the only artist in history to have had an album enter the charts at number one. Michael Jackson never did it before him. Sinatra never did it. The Beatles never did it.
And Elton did it twice.
And Elton did it twice, two times in a row. I mean, there were some amazing. He broke all kinds of attendance records for concerts. When he played that Dodger Stadium show in the film, you really don't get the enormity. That was the first time that anybody played Dodger Stadium since the Beatles, and he did two shows there.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no question that he was super popular. Some more of the texts was rock. This is the one I've been hearing this question over and over and over since I saw this movie at the premiere in London. Was Rocket Man better than Bohemian Rhapsody? Everybody wants to compare this movie to the Freddie Mercury biopic. And
I don't think there's any comparison. I think this movie is hands down the better film on every level. And I thought Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, the star was brilliant. I thought he did a brilliant job of capturing Freddie. But I could spend an hour picking that movie apart.
Sharon, how about you? Did you see Bohemian Rhapsody?
Oh, yes. And I compared it a lot in my mind, of course. Bohemian Rhapsody is more a reality version, even though there are also some inaccuracies there. But at first, I would say I would like Bohemian Rhapsody better, but now I'm liking Rocket Man better. And in fact, so Rocket Man, people need to keep in mind, only goes up to the summer of 1990. So I would like to see a sequel called Captain Fantastic that takes you from Elton's life and career in 1990 to the present day, because then they'll show, you know, what he did for Princess Diana and all his charity work and more of the good things in his life.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
There are documentaries being planned, and we of course have Elton's autobiography coming out in October called Me, and it'll be interesting to see how he presents his story in book form and how accurate that will be. I think that's going to be kind of confusing to the public, because they'll see the movie and take that versions, as fact, and right. then
as the casual fan comparing to Bohemian Rhapsody, I like them both. I can't really say that I liked one better than the other. I like them both very much. One is told in a more of a straight chronology from the beginning of Freddie Mercury's life, and it progressed as he got older. And Elton's movie is, as Wayne said, it's like a stage musical. It bounces around all over the place, and songs from later in his career are used to tell stories from earlier in his career.
I enjoyed Bohemian Rhapsody as well. I didn't like the way they glossed over the whole gay aspect. And that's a big thing with Elton's film. This is the first major motion picture to honestly depict a gay lifestyle. And that in itself is groundbreaking, and they just glossed over all of that in the Freddie Mercury.
Somebody asking, have I seen the movie Yesterday yet? And I'll just bring this up since we're talking about movies that are about music. This is that Beatles movie that's going to be coming out where something happens in the world and everybody loses any memory whatsoever about the Beatles. The Beatles never existed, basically, except one guy remembers and uses it to create his own musical career. I did see it. It's delightful. It's charming. That's all I'll say about it right now.
Yeah, that's one that I want to see.
More as we get closer to it.
That sounds really interesting.
So, Dean, I have a question for you now, since you are one of the premier movie critics here in Chicago. So the movie Rocket Man, where do you think, come Oscar time, what do you think happens?
I think Taron Egerton definitely gets nominated. I think his performance is one of the strongest that we've seen this year so far. Certainly,
he was great. I thought he was great.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, that's for sure. It'll depend on what else happens for the rest of the year to make any wild predictions.
I mean, I'm just saying, but because the movie is released so earlier in the year, and a lot of times the Oscar nominations come to films that are released later in the year.
Yeah, but the movie Get Out came out, the year that it came out was in April, and certainly didn't get forgotten. And I don't think this one, I don't think Taron's performance is going to get forgotten.
I think costuming, too, will be another And they say the big competition for this movie is going to be the Judy Garland movie, which comes out in the fall.
Yeah, with Renee Zellweger.
Yeah, and so, you know, time will tell. I did want to say, too, that we were talking about things that are left out and everything. I read where Dexter Fletcher, the director, yeah, only got the final edit of this film 3 days before it premiered at Cannes. And up to that point, I read where the movie was actually 2 hours and 20 minutes long, and it's 2 hours and 1 minute now. So, you know, even of that late date, they were editing things out.
Yeah, wouldn't it bothered me if it was even longer. I thought it flew by. It was not a movie.
It was very fast paced.
The drag. Wayne, hang on one second. Because I'm going to take a break. Wow.
Oh, okay.
I can see he's your friend, Jim. I'll be right back after this.
I hope you don't mind. I hope you don't mind. God, I put down in the words how wonderful life is while you're in the world. I hope you don't mind. I hope you don't mind.
423 area code says Elton John doesn't compare to the Beatles. Bernie's words are really the genius behind Elton John. Any comment on that?
Wow. Well,
everyone's entitled to an opinion.
Elton John has said on numerous occasions for almost the last 50 years there would be no Elton John without Bernie Taupin, but I also think there would be no Bernie Taupin without Elton John.
Here is another text saying, saw the movie yesterday. Loved it. Whole family loved it. Went to see Rocket Man yesterday. The best film that I've ever seen. So,
and I didn't write that text.
Yeah, I didn't even notice you send that in. 815 area code. Saw Rocket Man. Loved the artsy approach. 312-981-7200. Hi, Dave. You're on WGN.
Good afternoon, everyone. Now that we have the Blue Band Group would call the Brainiac Top Sockets. I would, just one quick question. When I was 15, I bought my first Elton John album, and it was 11/17/70.
Wow.
And after that, I was just after every album I could get. I don't have them all, by no means, but the record store owner turned me on also to Tumbleweed Connection, so I took them both that day. But I was just interested in how 11/17/70 came about with Nigel Olsen and Dee Murray and the small studio in New York.
Anybody?
You want to take that, Sharon?
Oh, sure. Well, 11/17/70 was the date of a concert that Elton did in New York City for a radio station. And so many people recorded it off the radio that they put out bootleg records. So eventually the record company decided that they needed to put out an official release of the record to combat all the bootleg releases.
And that really is the band. When you see that sequence at the Troubadour, which was his American debut, they have him singing Crocodile Rock, which is impossible because that song was written 3 years later. But it was only Elton and a drummer and the bass player, as Sharon said. So that was kind of rejiggered for the film as well. But
right, that would have been Dee Murray and Nigel Olsen.
Correct. And that album is really considered one of the greatest live albums because it was just re-released on vinyl a couple of years ago. So the whole show was available for the first time. And many rock critics think that's one of the best live albums of all time. And it's just three guys, just a piano, drums, and bass.
Yeah, that used
to be. It was also the first ever radio concert of its kind, too.
Sharon? I can actually tell when the record was recorded. I could still play it on my old turntable, but you can tell it was in a very small room.
There's like 100 people there. That's all there was.
Yeah.
Talking about first Elton John albums, my first one was Goodbye Yellow Brick Road on 8-track.
Ah.
Seriously, and I think I may still have it.
So it clicked over during Funeral for a Friend.
It actually did click
yes,
over.
Believe me.
And that was my favorite song on that 8-track, Funeral for a Friend. I would blast it in my car, and it always killed me that this beautiful piece of art
was
destroyed by 8-trackdom. Wayne, you wanted to make a point before we were going to go to the break.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if I have a complaint about the Rocketman movie, it's that I love the orchestrations and I love what Giles Martin has done with the songs, but with few exceptions in the movie, very few of the songs are able to really breathe and to be able to really hear the whole songs. They're all cut short.
Yeah.
And you know, I realize, again, you know, because of timing and everything, that has to be, but I was really disappointed in the soundtrack album, because pretty much everything on the album is exactly the way it is in the film, so these songs just kind of end abruptly.
Yeah, that's my criticism of almost any musical biopic. Where they cut the song short, and even stage musicals, too, where they cut the song short.
Yeah.
And you just want to really enjoy them. What they ought to do is sort of a director's cut after the fact, where they, you know, even
right.
though the movie may wind up being 4 hours long, but they do full versions of them so fans can enjoy them if they want to. We have to take a break for news, but I want to thank Sharon Kalinowski. I want to thank Wayne Martin. Also thank Jim Toronto for turning us on to a couple of other Elton John super fans who don't seem nearly as weird as you do.
I'm telling you. Well, you haven't sat. You should see us in a conversation. When I visit Wayne at his home and we stay for two or three or four days with my wife, basically our wives just leave the premises.
Those are two lucky ladies right there.
And we just are sitting in Wayne's basement listening to songs and talking about till from like, you know, 10 in the morning till about 3 in the morning the next day.
Yeah.
And we don't even see our wives for 3 days.
Yeah. Hey, Wayne and Sharon, has Jim shared with you what he did while he went to see the Elton John movie? He went to see it twice. In one day, he paid to go to see one screening of it, and then the second screening was going to start but a half an hour later, so he snuck into the second one, but in that half an hour in between, he went and sat in a toilet stall in the men's room for a half an hour. Let's see you Elton John superfans top that.
Well, I don't want to get caught.
I just stayed in my seat. I didn't leave. Nobody came into the theater, and so I just sat there and didn't leave and watched it the second
time.
Yeah,
well, Jim just sat there, too. But, you know, whole different way. Guys, thank you all very much. We're going to take a break for news, and we'll come back with our food time segment. And we've got Tony Bennett tickets to give away.
All right.
Coming up after 12 on the station, where you can get on a Blackhawks getaway for two in Europe. Listen to Win Your Way to Pucks and Prague weekday mornings at 7:40 on the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN Chicago.